My question comes from reading Views on Socialism and Communism series, the communist view of communism in particular. We use this phrase, freely associating community of human beings. I think that came from Marx to describe communism, but after reading Views on, it seemed to me that there was a lot of stress on communist society not being a collection of individuals, of it being a society. I'm trying to understand the dialectics of this with more coherence, not less. To me, association connotes less coherence in society. Then there's the question of freely associating. You talked in the series that there's still necessity in communism, and you've said that 10,000 years from now, there's still the forces and relations of production, and that contradiction. It's what Marx says. People are born into, they don't decide the production relations they live under when they come into life. It seems like what you've brought forward has gone beyond that conception, that freely associated community, and that even in communist society, necessity will still be there. It would be transformed, it would be very different necessity, but it would still, in the overall sense, be principle. When I read A Communist View of Communism, I was picturing communism as more subordination in the sense of more integration into the overall life of society and the questions that it's wrangling with. I think there's some truth to that, but then you are also saying, I think, that individual conscience and pursuit of reality will have an important and broad scope in itself and as part of the overall role of changing the world. I'm very curious what your thinking on all this was. I think this is related to there being institutions and rules, but not laws in communism.
Yeah, well, that's a very good question, but you can see why I sometimes give a long answer. No, it is a very big question and a very good question, but it does have to do with the first question, with the whole point about rules and all that. That we're saying or I'm saying there's not a meaning or an important meaning to a freely associating, you know, human beings, a society or an association of people freely associate. That has a lot of meaning, but it's not absolute. You know, freedom is always defined in terms of its opposite, in terms of necessity. You don't ever get away from necessity. There used to be, you know, sometimes in the formulation in the history of the communist movement that the advance to communism meant the advance from the realm of necessity to the realm of freedom. That's wrong. You know, you don't go from where you're entirely enslaved to necessity to where you're entirely free of necessity by going from, you know, pre-communist society and class society to communism. You always are dealing with the dialectical relation, the contradiction between necessity and what freedom you can wrench out of by transforming necessity. In other words, there's always material reality that you have to deal with. If you're going to live, if you're going to function, if you're going to, you know, do other things beyond merely living, like having art and culture and recreation and play and all these other things. There has to be a material framework within which those things can happen. You know, if you're living in a part of Hawaii where they have a lot of fruit growing rather abundantly, you know, and you aren't interfered with by people taking it over as private property and whatever, you can, you know, in a small group, you can live pretty freely that way just by, you know, eating a different fruit or whatever, you know. But it's not possible to sustain 6 or 7 billion people in the world on that kind of basis. And, you know, maybe it'll be 10 billion or more by the time, or more than that by the time we get, or maybe it'll be less because of nuclear weapons or environmental devastation. Who knows? But anyway, it's not going to be small pockets of people just isolated here and there in the most favorable, quote-unquote, natural conditions. So people, once again, the reason that Mao is emphasizing that you're still going to have the forces of relations of production and you're still going to have the base and the superstructure is because people are still going to have to come together to produce and reproduce the material requirements of life and other social requirements that they themselves identify. And that requires, in one form or another, not only the living with, but the transformation of material reality, both natural and social. You have to keep on changing the material world, you know, the natural world, from which you draw sustenance, and you have to keep on changing the social world with which you and through which you interact with the natural world, both in its economic base and in its superstructure. You keep on changing those things. That was his point. That's what he was emphasizing. But here's the qualitative leap that is involved. It's not a leap from all necessity to all freedom, but it is a leap in which when people enter into these relations, fundamentally production relations, but corresponding social relations and superstructural relations and institutions, once they've achieved the four alls, that association will not have to and will not go through the institutionalization of antagonistic relationships in which one part of society is monopolizing not only economic life but intellectual life and cultural life and political life, and in which those relations in both the base and the superstructure are interfering with people's ability to, in a conscious and voluntary way, understood relatively, understood as a qualitative leap from what we have now, to consciously and voluntarily come together and struggle together over how to change nature and how to change society in the way that they determine is in their interest, without that going through the machinery, so to speak, without it being reprocessed through class divisions and the underlying production relations on which those class distinctions rest and the corresponding social relations and ideas and culture. That's the qualitative difference. So it gives a scope and dimension to conscious and voluntary activity and association which is not absolute. That was the point in Views on. It's not absolute. We shouldn't view it in metaphysical, you know, it's beyond reality. That's what meta means, beyond physical, you know, beyond the physical material reality. It's some sort of supernatural thing. And it's some sort of absolute thing that's, you know, fixed in the heavens or whatever. And it's not some sort of ideal thing where everything's perfect, you know, and it's ordained by God or some human equivalent. It's full of motion and contradiction. And it still goes through the mediation, if you will. It still takes shape through human beings entering into definite social relations and developing a corresponding superstructure and the tension and motion that results from that as it interacts with the rest of nature. But it's in a qualitatively different framework. It doesn't have to go through and be, if you want to put it that way, from a historical perspective, misshapen, deformed, in a certain sense, by going through these, and, you know, coming out stamped with class divisions and all the other parts of the four alls. So those, not all impediments to understanding reality, not all obstacles to correctly grasping reality and changing it, but those obstacles, those impediments will be removed, will have been advanced beyond. And then human beings on that basis will be able to, in the relative sense which I'm talking about it, and in the sense of something in motion and moving through contradiction and not static, absolute, and supernatural and metaphysical and all that, will be able to consciously subordinate themselves to the greater societal good. Not to the extinguishing of individual identity and individuality and individual initiative and individual creativity. In fact, it will be released on a greater level because it has to do with the point about right can never be higher than the economic structure of society and the culture conditioned thereby, understanding that in broad terms from Marx. If you are living in a society, for example, where the great majority of people have to spend a great majority of their lives every day laboring just to survive, the sphere of freedom of individuals is extremely and severely restricted. So you may have, even if you abstractly have all kinds of rights, what ability do you have even to exercise those rights? If most of your life has to be absorbed merely in doing those things that enable you to survive in one form or another, and especially when that's in a form that's alien to you, when you're being forced to work for someone else for ends other than ones that you would identify and decide upon, which is the case under exploiting systems. I mean, Marx made the point that when you go to, and everybody's experienced this, that under the capitalist system, the proletariat does not consider or experience work as an expression, as an affirmation of its life, but as a denial and a negation of its life. That's the part of your life that you want to get away from as soon as you can. And then your life starts whatever part's left as soon as you get the fuck away from there. See, this is work under capitalism, but when you're working voluntarily, not that some work won't be dull, boring, or physically hard, but it takes on a different meaning. Everybody knows that. You volunteer to go down to New Orleans to clean up these devastated homes, it's shit work, you know? But you have a whole different attitude toward it than you do if you were doing that under the dictates and the, you know, and the command of capitalists and the accumulation of capital for some purpose alien to you that you don't believe in or give a fuck about. And is only going to end up putting you in more and in that position more firmly. And locking you more, you know, tightly in that situation. So there's a vast difference there. And when you are entering into the discussion about what should we be doing in society, what should we be producing, how should we be in having, you know, what kind of culture should we have, and what's the relationship between individuals going off and doing what they want to do and creating culture and us coming together and having poetry where we listen to each other's poetry and criticize it and then go off and write some more poetry and come back and listen some more. You know, all those things will be what people will be talking about. Not everybody about everything all the time, but, you know, there'll still be personal preferences and personal inclinations and even personal abilities more in line with certain things. But in an overall sense, people will be wrangling with these things and then doing their part for society in order to enhance the sphere in which there can be more of that. The more that you can, see, that's why you have to develop, you do have to develop the productive forces. It's just that there's not a direct relationship between how much technology you develop and how free people are. I mean, that's quite the contrary. Look at today's world. There's an indirect relationship. The more the technology is developed, the more enslaved most people are. That's a big difference under communism, too. The more the technology would be developed under communism, the less people would be enslaved to certain things, although they never get rid of a necessity. But one of the real meanings of that is that when you can reduce the sphere of time that has to be spent by the society as a whole in reproducing the material requirements of life and providing for the future, if that takes, instead of the average of 8 hours a day on every person's part, except for in class society, those parasites who don't take part in that but who accumulate from it and who appropriate what's produced, if it's, say, you reduce that from 8 hours to 2 hours all over the world, well, then you can have lots of debate. Should we work another couple hours to lay aside more so we can build more of this or that? Or should we, you know, work only 2 hours and then go off and do other things during that time because we have enough to do those other things? And that's what people will struggle over. See, that will be the struggle. Or, you know, those people want to work 4 hours. Can we have a arrangement where those who want to work 4 hours can do so and those who don't, without it turning into where some people are living off of others, and how would that work? Those will be the character of how people will be engaging necessity. And they'll change their production and social relations as they go along. They'll change that necessity. They'll change those social and natural conditions, and that'll call forth new things they'll have to be confronted with. And then a natural disaster will hit, and they'll have to take a step back. Say, well, everybody has to work 5 hours a day now. And they'll, but there won't be orders issued from Communist Central. There'll be, you know, centralizing institutions, but there'll be struggle among people about this. And all those mechanisms, exactly what they are, we can't exactly predict. We can get a sense of the general character of it. But you have to see communism, too, in its living, dynamic way. So it's, yes, people are freely and consciously, voluntarily and consciously associating and changing the objective world in themselves, but not in some sort of absolute sense. It's in a, but what is important is it is in a qualitatively different way than that is done now, where the way in which people interact with nature now and with each other is antagonistic to and harmful to the great majority of the people forced to do it in that way. And where besides that, and here's the crucial thing, that no longer has to be, and in fact, the fact that it still is a hindrance to the further development of human society and the people who make it up. That's the key thing to understand. For thousands of years, that's been the way it is. That the way in which people were interacting with each other and with nature at the same time was in a way that was inimical to, contrary to, harmful to the interests of the great majority who were exploited and enslaved in that process, and whose life activity was overwhelmingly a denial, a negation of their own aspirations. And in communism, that's not true in that social sense. It doesn't mean they don't have necessity, but that has qualitatively changed. And the fact that that's true now is not unique in history. That's been true for thousands of years, that most people in this social arrangement, if you want to put it for simple terms, are suffering under it, is not new. What's new is that it's no longer necessary. And in fact, it stands in the way of people being able to have a much more enriched and fulfilled life. And that's what establishes the material basis and the necessity and the drive to make that leap, and when you become conscious of that and take that up, you become a communist. And then you don't turn it into capital, you turn it into a means of mobilizing others to understand and to act on that through a whole historical process.